for WFHB in Bloomington, this is Hereabouts,
a collaboration with the IU Asian Culture Center.
Good afternoon, my name is Kimber Garland, and I am one of today's co-hosts.
And I'm Joyce Lam. You're currently listening to Hereabouts, broadcast on WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Today, we are talking about an evening of solidarity that occurred at Monroe County Courthouse on Tuesday, August 27th. The name of the program was Bloomington United, We Are Stronger Than Hate. The evening was meant to be an opportunity for diverse Bloomington citizens to simply stand together against hate, and it was in reaction to recent events at our Bloomington Farmers Market.
This is part one of a three-part series. On today's episode, we'll have a few excerpts from some of the guest speakers from the Bloomington United event. For more information and to donate, go to NIOT.org, that is NIOT, which stands for Not in Our Town.
And if you would like to learn more ways to continue the fight against hate, visit the Southern Poverty Law Center for further resources.
Hello, this is Hereabouts producer Elise Lee with fellow producer
Joyce Lam.
Today, we are at the Bloomington Courthouse in Bloomington, Indiana, attending the Bloomington United No Hate event. We are going to be gathering some thoughts from the crowd attending and listening to their opinions. Hi, are you Rabbi Sue?
I am.
Hi, I'm Elise from
nice
the Asian Cultural Center. And this is Joyce.
Hi there.
We're basically just asking some questions about the event. Oh, so if we could just ask what your name is, what your occupation is.
I'm Rabbi Sue Silberberg, and I'm the executive director of the Helene G. Simon Hillel Center.
So then we just wanted to ask you, from a perspective of someone in the Jewish community, how do you think that the Jewish community has reacted to this? And have you felt any changes? Just what's going on within the community? We heard about what happened over the summer.
Yeah, I think that people are scared. I think that people feel marginalized and frightened. And some people don't know what's going on, but then others are feeling the rise in anti-Semitic incidences, particularly on college campuses, is the highest that it's been since the statistics have been kept. And so just across the country, there's fear. There are people who are afraid to say that they're Jewish. We've had people tell us they're afraid to come to Hillel because they don't know if they'll be safe.
And for those who don't know, what had happened over the summer that is worth mentioning about to educate our listeners today?
I think the incidences are that there have been, the KKK has been littering with flyers around campus, and then also at the farmers market, although it wasn't directed only at the Jewish community, it was directed at all minority communities. There's been a lot with one of the vendors at the farmers market who's known to be a white supremacist. And there's been a great divide in Bloomington over what to do about that vendor. And then prior to that in the summer, not in Bloomington, but in Indianapolis, there was a synagogue who had swastikas painted on it. There was, University of Indianapolis, there were also swastikas painted in a dorm there.
In conjunction with this event, how do you think that the Bloomington community can come together to combat these sources of racism and hate?
It's a great question. I think what's most important is that all of us that believe in diversity and believe in inclusion and believe in being part of this community and want to promote diversity need to stand up and be counted and need to come together, because I think what happens is each individual feels marginalized and isolated by the hate that's rising in the country. And I don't think it's the majority. I think it's a minority of white supremacists and it's a minority of people who hate. But when you see it and it's so vocal and so visible and weapons are involved and all of that, we begin to feel like that's everybody and that I'm a minority and nobody cares about me. And so we have to have as many opportunities as possible for those of us who care to come together and to state that we care and we want to see change and we want to make the world a diverse place because we appreciate and support the diversity in this world.
I heard Gerda Weissman Klein speak. She was one of the first Holocaust survivors that I heard speak. She'd written her story, the story of her life during the Holocaust, in a book called All But My Life. She described the horrors of the Holocaust, the inhumane cruelty that she suffered, the loss of her family at the hands of the Nazi, and all of this happened while the world looked on in silence. It was for me the beginning of a personal quest to learn more about the Holocaust and to try to understand how it could have happened. In college, I took a course on the Holocaust, and I remember going up to my professor after class and saying to him, how was it that the Holocaust happened? What was the rest of the world doing? How could they just stand by and watch while it happened? He just turned to me and he kind of dismissed me by saying, I can't answer that question while standing on one foot. He turned around and was done talking to me. That question of how the world could have allowed the Holocaust to happen has always nagged at me until the past couple of years, when unfortunately, I've watched what's happening around us both here in America and across the world. We've slowly watched over the past 2 years as many minority groups are being demonized and hatred is being spouted. And then a year ago, I went to another visit at Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Israel. I've been there many times, but each time I go, our tour guide focuses on a different aspect of Yad Vashem. The guide I had last year concentrated on how the Holocaust happened and the climate that Hitler created that enabled him to perpetuate that cruel, cruel inhumanity. Much to my growing fear and terror, my guide explained in perfect detail the steps to Hitler's rise to power, what factors led to it, and how and why Hitler succeeded in his plan to exterminate the Jews, and in the process did exterminate 6 million Jews and 12 million people. As she explained, the lump in my throat grew bigger and bigger, and I felt myself grow colder and colder with fear, dread, and horror. She explained how Hitler had created a new normal while demonizing and dehumanizing the Jews. At first, when Hitler ran for office, he wasn't very popular. People didn't believe that he could even be elected. He was viewed as someone with crazy ideas. But what happened is he managed to lower the bar of what was acceptable with his hateful language that he spewed, his captivating ideas, and his propensity for violence. He had a plan to make Germany great again. And as he rose to power, he was able to gain enough popularity to get into office, and soon he became a demagogue. As he spewed his hatred against the Jews and other minority groups such as homosexuals, gypsies, and people with disabilities, and spoke of his anti-Semitic plans, people said that he couldn't really do anything, and the party leadership thought that they could keep him under control. But soon, he lowered the threshold of what was acceptable, and people became used to his hateful language and his hateful, horrible ideas. And after all, they said, they were only words. But what he succeeded in doing was creating a new normal in Germany. On Kristallnacht, the night of the broken glass, Jewish businesses and synagogues were destroyed in the first act of state-sponsored violence against the Jewish community. While some people raised their eyebrows, thought that it was wrong, the majority of people kept silent. They didn't know what to do, and maybe many of them either tacitly or actually approved of Hitler's actions. Again, a new normal of what was acceptable was created. Next came the Nuremberg Laws that barred Jews from attending public schools, going to theaters, and even residing in or walking in certain sections of German cities. Jewish businesses were seized as Jews were increasingly barred from economic life. The Nazi propaganda machine continued to dehumanize and blame the Jews for everything that was happening. While some people were opposed to these hateful policies, they didn't know how to stop Hitler or the Nazi Party. And again, the threshold of what had previously been acceptable was lowered, and a new normal had been created. This continued until 6 million Jews and 12 million people were killed by Hitler during World War II. Over the past 2 years, we've been watching a similar phenomenon here in America. We have witnessed a new low in political discourse that has become the new normal. We are watching the demonization of immigrants and other minority groups. We've seen the rise in white supremacy. As a Jew, I feel marginalized and terrified by the rise in anti-Semitism. As we watch in disgust and horror, we feel hopeless, helpless, angry, and full of fear and dread. Many of us feel isolated and believe that we don't have the power to stop what is happening in our country. And unfortunately, we are now beginning to see a new normal here in America. And that is why we are here tonight. Look at how many of us came out to say no to hate and to white supremacy. And there have been gatherings similar to ours in other communities across the country. We have to know that we have the power to make change, but we have to work together. We must not accept hatred and white supremacy as our new normal here in America. We have to all band together. We can't fight each other. We cannot distance ourselves from one another. I'm reminded of Anne Frank's words from her diary that she wrote during the Holocaust, where she said, "It's really a wonder that I haven't dropped all of my ideals because they seem so absurd and impossible to carry out. Yet I keep them because in spite of everything, I still believe that people are really good at heart. I simply can't build up my hopes on a foundation consisting of confusion, misery, and death. I see the world gradually being turned into a wilderness. I hear the ever-approaching thunder that will destroy us too. I can feel the sufferings of millions, and yet I look up into the heavens. I think that it will all come right, that this cruelty too will end, and that peace and tranquility will return again. In the meantime, I must uphold my ideals, for perhaps the time will come when I shall be able to carry them out. Like Anne, I too believe that the majority of people are good at heart. And I too believe that we have to uphold our ideals. And I believe that cruelty and hate not only can, but must come to an end. However, we cannot and must not sit by idly and patiently. We cannot and must not just wait for tranquility to return. We must not accept a new normal that allows white supremacy and hatred to dominate. We must not accept a new normal where we feel isolated, alone, and powerless. We must never accept a new normal where we believe that we are helpless to make the world a better place. Instead, we must create the world that we believe in and that we want to see. We must, as it says in our Bloomington United mission, affirm the value of all human beings, bridge the differences between people, and resist strongly and respond nonviolently to hate activity in our community. And that is why we are here tonight. Our presence tonight declares that we have the power to stand together arm in arm and create a new normal that recognizes the beauty of our diversity based on the importance of inclusivity and working together as a strong, vibrant community. We stand united and we are stronger than hate.
Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. That was Rabbi Sue talking about the occurrences of hate in the community during the Bloomington United event. Up next, We will feature an interview with Doug Bowder, followed by a speech given by Melanie Castillo-Culliter, who will be speaking about the injustice that occurred to Won Jun-yoon 20 years ago.
What is your name and how are you associated with the event today?
Right. My name is Doug Bowder. I'm co-director of Bloomington United. I've been involved in it for 20 years. Pay close attention to what Melanie has to say today because she'll be giving a little of the history in regards to the Asian student who was shot and killed 20 years ago. And it was out of that incident that we as a community started working together. So,
could you tell us more about the event today and what is to occur?
Well, it's basically several speeches of solidarity, how important it is to stand together. We found it very effective 20 years ago to distribute the signs that are here today so that people who feel they don't have a voice and are tired of all the negative energy that's gone around, not just the community, but the country, they want to speak out against it. And this gives them an opportunity to do that. So.
And hopefully the event will be very successful tonight. Thank you for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Just listen to Melanie because she has an important story from the perspective of the Asian students on campus.
Please join me in thanking the organizers, Bloomington United. Special thanks to Doug Bowder, Rabbi Sue, and also everyone in the Bloomington United. Another big round of applause for them for their efforts. And of course, Carrie Newcomer for that beautiful rendition of the music. My name is Melanie Castillo-Culliter, and I work at the Asian Cultural Center at Indiana University. I've lived here for about 26 years now, and this is my new home, my old home. I moved from the Philippines, and so tonight's event is very personal to me and to my family. 20 years, 1 month, and 3 weeks ago, Won Jun-yoon, a graduate student who was about to begin his studies at IU, was gunned down by Benjamin Nathaniel Smith, a white supremacist. Today, if you Google Won Jun-yoon, the top hit is Benjamin Nathaniel Smith. Even in death, brown people are footnotes in the lives of their oppressors. We are known only as the objects of the actions of the perpetrators. Won Jun-yoon was murdered because he was not white. He was murdered by an ideology based on a twisted and despicable message of hate. What lessons have we learned since that fateful day of July 4th, 1999? We learned that our community is not immune to the dangers of pervasiveness of white nationalism. We learned that we cannot and must not be complacent. We learned that when specific groups of people in our community are targeted because of their color, origin, sexual orientation, and faith, we stand by our fellow men and work hard to protect them. We also learn that when our community's values are attacked, we come together as we do tonight. We gather tonight to reject white supremacists, to loudly say no to hate, not in our backyard, not in our town, not anywhere. Twenty years ago, there was no social media, but white supremacy was already here. With the advent of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, one would think it might be easier to combat hate and spread our message of love, tolerance, peace, and unity. However, the same social media also makes it easier for white supremacists to divide us. Each of us may differ in perspectives, in our responses, and in our approach on how to deal with our farmers market situation, for instance. Our differences of opinion may be grounded and may be influenced by our experiences, level of awareness, education, privilege, and our conviction for racial justice. I hear families, neighbors, co-workers, and friends whose relationships have been threatened by disagreement and fights over opposing views. We should not let our disagreements divide us, for this is exactly what white supremacists want. Their goal is to spread hate, create fear, and sow division. We must also recognize that white supremacy has a support structure. A key element of this structure in Indiana is the disempowerment of cities. In order to deny the power or even the existence of non-white majorities in Gary, East Chicago, and Hammond, the state of Indiana has historically and systematically stripped cities of legal powers, including Bloomington, over education, law enforcement, taxation, elections, and of course, gun rights. The result is that we are allowed under law to have a farmer's market, but our city doesn't have the power to protect it. We want the power. We want our city officials to have the power to protect not just our farmer's market, but also our community. Tonight is another sobering example of how we come together despite our differences. We gather in solidarity and with a strong message to those who want to divide us that their hateful ideology is not welcome and has no space in Bloomington. Thank you.
So we're from the Asian Culture Center of IU, actually. We're doing a rodeo program called Hereabouts. Okay. So first of all, could we just get your name and your occupation?
My name is Minjung Kang, and I am an assistant professor at the Media School, Indiana University.
So how long have you been a part of the Bloomington community?
Well, we moved here in 2012, so I think that makes us 7 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you personally witnessed these acts of racism happening? Have you seen maybe a growth trend happening within like recent years, or do you think that this is something that you've seen before?
Well, I think in 2016, with the election of President Trump, that we've seen some, you know, graffitis in some community buildings or churches. I personally have not experienced any negative actions against me or my family, but you know, we are from New York and from a little liberal part of the country. Moving to Indiana, we were a little nervous because of the history of the states, and also we just did not know much about Bloomington at the time. But I think that Indiana in general can do better, but Bloomington is certainly exceptionally inclusive community. So I've been very lucky that I have not personally experienced anything like that. But at the same time that I've seen the changes in the environment, the conversations that I'm hearing over social media, also among our neighbors, who kind of seem to think that this is something that is passing and then they should not bring it up, because it feels like by talking about it that we're actually bringing up, like, you know, the negative side of the community. But I feel differently, so I try to become part of the activisms or rallies as much as I can.
So what does the event mean to you?
It means that we are not going to stand still or sit still, but we are going to do something about what we see as a problematic. So the messages that I heard from many speakers today is you got to act, but you got to act with love instead of hate. And sort of reflecting on, you know, the recent happenings in the farmers market, I was trying to think, what should I do then when I actually go and interact with the, you know, the vendor who is in question? Like, how should I respond to their belief with love? And I was kind of trying to think that, how should I do, or what should I do to result in the change of heart? That takes something extraordinary, but also it could take something as little as just go and greet with the vendors when everybody is trying to avoid them. I think that's certainly an act of courage, but doing something, I think that's what this rally means for.
And can I ask you, what would you like one thing for the Bloomington community to know?
Well, I would like to say that as a person of color, a person who lives here in Bloomington, and also a person who has privileged, when it comes to education, socioeconomic status, I would say that I am privileged compared to other people, even in Bloomington or in other parts of Indiana, that if we stay silent, nobody will speak up. And even as a person of privilege, I feel uneasy when a conversation turns against the people of color or different faith or religion, ethnic, backgrounds, because we, from the history, we know that what it led to, right? What it could lead to. So I want my friends who are not a person of color, right, or not from underprivileged background, to stand up if they want to maintain this community as inclusive and as welcoming. They cannot just sit and wait for things to pass. They have to actually voice out their support, because that's what the speaker said today, that what led to the Holocaust was the majority silent. And it was by allowing this minority fringe people to actually take hold of the norms. I think that's what led to this evil action. So I want to encourage people in our community to voice out their support, because that means a lot to people like me, to people like, people of color, people of different backgrounds and culture.
As someone who is not personally a part of the Bloomington community year-round, I'm just curious to know, would you say that the majority of your non-people of color friends, they do tend to stay quiet about these issues, or do you think that they are more willing to come out to these events?
Well, I think it really depends. I was actually pretty taken aback to see so many people here today, but I also expected more people of color showing up. But I think in general that we are conditioned to stand back a little bit, because we don't want to create a scene, or we don't want to make too much noise, because when we create too much noise, that's when negative actions come our way. So I was a little bit taken aback, but also was very greatly encouraged to see so many people from different backgrounds, from people you wouldn't consider as disenfranchised or discriminated against, show up and showed support for equality, social justice. But at the same time, if I look around, the people who are not in academia or people probably don't have much interactions with people of different backgrounds, they tend to be uncomfortable. It's not like they don't support or they condone white supremacy. They think this are all very despicable. I think they're just uncomfortable to talk about these things or to bring it up, because that could also be like bringing up their sordid history of their ancestors. And I think in many ways, that's what prevents them from voicing out. I just don't know what it is, but that's typically how I have come to conclude that people just generally don't feel comfortable talking about tensions among the races, or even like racism here in Bloomington, which exists, but
You've been listening to Hereabouts with the IU Asian Culture Center, broadcast by WFHB in Bloomington. Our theme music is by Eternal Youth. Tune in to Hereabouts every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m.